Okay, we're going to call this meeting to order. We are unofficially meeting. We don't have a quorum at this time. As soon as we get a quorum, then we'll reorganize here. But in order to save some time here, we'll ask Representative Junkie to take a table here. Uh-huh. Members, we do have a quorum now, so why don't we proceed with business. First of all, I'll move the Representative Erickson is going to move the minutes from our last meeting. Is there any discussion on the minutes? And seeing none, all those in favor of approving the minutes as they're written, signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? The minutes pass. Before we really get into the work that we're doing today, I'd like to talk a little bit about the scope of this particular committee and some of the work we're going to try to do. And I think it's important to hear as many the bills as we can here on this particular industry. This is going to be a really complicated and hot topic here for members of the House, but we're going to try to hear as many bills as possible in the division and limit passage to a few major bills or those that need to go to other committees. This will allow us to be best acquainted with the gaming issues, and I think it's a better way to proceed to allow amendments to these bills rather than having just a few bills selected for proceeding. This will help us reduce scheduling and the timing load before the full committee, which also must hear each of these bills as it's moved out of our committee. My vision for the division is also going to be include three pretty much comprehensive omnibus-type bills, one dealing with technical changes to the law, probably one dealing with policy changes, such as Texas Hold'em could be one of those things that might be included in that particular bill, and probably an omnibus bill dealing with the financial aspects of the gaming industry and those issues, and then whatever bills might come up that we need to pass and move on through this committee. So with that said, we'll be hearing some testimony here on some bills that we're just going to lay over for possible inclusion in one of those bills, and some of the bills will be hopefully moving on to other committees to get those necessary committee hearings that those bills are going to need to have in order to survive and get through session. So with that, let's begin the agenda here, and we'll start with House File 803. I'll move House File 803 for consideration here before the committee, and I notice that you have an author's amendment.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, if you can move the 8-3 amendment, it's a delete everything amendment, and then that gets the bill in the proper form for the committee to look at.
And thank you, Representative Junkie. I'll move amendment 8-3 to the 803 bill to get it in the proper form. Is there any discussion on the 8-3 amendment at this time? And hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed, no. Representative Junkie, or the amendment prevails. Representative Junkie, please tell us what your bill does.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, and thanks for the opportunity to hear the bill. This came to me a few weeks ago from Senator Rest's office, actually sent it over, and the reason it was sent to me, and if you look at the authors on the bill, Abrams, Johnson, Sikora, Smith, and others, we all live in areas of the state that have lakes. And the last few years, some of you are probably aware, or maybe you're not, that we have these little rubber duck kind of contests out in these lakes area. Essentially, in fact, last 4th of July in Spicer, Minnesota, I bought a package of rubber ducks for like $20, and they gave me one of these. It's been on the dash of my car, Mr. Chair, ever since, so I think it was predetermined that I would have this bill this year. It was sitting on the dash of my car as I pulled into the Capitol this morning. He watches down the road. Anyway, we call it the Canned Ducky Derby. And, you know, they'll sell 10 or 20,000 of these little critters, and they dump them into Green Lake, and then whichever three come across the finish line first, and if your number happens to be on the bottom of it, you win. Well, lo and behold, for some reason, we find out that in Minnesota, this does not follow the raffle rules as they were written, and technically they are illegal. So, but unlike hot dish and pickles, where we kind of fought the department, the gambling control folks are in the room and waving and smiling, and they're on board with fixing this so that our rubber duckies can run again in Minnesota. Before we prolong it any further, Mr. Chair, I have and the reason you're hearing it today, and I appreciate it, is we have an out-of-town guest from, I believe, Arizona that runs these type of tournaments to give a little explanation on what they are and why we should have a concern. And there's a couple other guests if you'd like to hear from them too, Mr. Chair. So perhaps I should just turn it over and let him.
That sounds real good, Wood. Welcome to our committee. Please state your name for the tape. Actually, you may have to spell it for us too, because we don't have it up here.
Yeah, it's not Swedish, unfortunately. It's Eric Schechter, S-C-H-E-C-H-T-E-R.
Thank you. Please proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Representative Junkie. Appreciate your time, and Chairman Westerberg. Thank you to this committee for allowing us to discuss just very briefly this bill with you today, and we also like to thank Representatives Abrams, Jeff Johnson, Sikora, Smith, Marquar for being off of this bill. As I stated previously, my name is Eric Schechter. I'm president of a company called Great American Merchandise and Events. I'm not from Minnesota, but did spend 7 summers in Bemidji, so at an Outward Bound camp, so that almost qualifies me as a native. I've still got mosquito bites to prove it. The purpose of a brief discussion today with you regarding House File 803 is to make minor modifications of existing charitable RAFA laws to allow for certain fundraising events to take place throughout the state of Minnesota. Specifically, one of these nonprofit events which would benefit from these minor modifications is affectionately called as the rubber duck race. Our company, Great American, have been assisting charities for over 15 years. We've held over 1,500 of these charitable events in that time, run legally in 49 states and 15 countries around the world, and we've helped raise over $60 million for nonprofits, and it's a fun family community type event. I mentioned 49 states because right now the only state that needs additional legislation to allow for these events is Minnesota. We didn't bring a lot of material for you today. We can get that to the committee. We certainly have a lot. We know you're busy. Didn't want to bog you down with a lot of that. But here's a good picture on the left of that screen of a typical race. That is the branded duck. They're rubber ducks. They're numbered. They're computerized. In the 1,500 events we've run, we've never had an issue with impropriety. And on the right side of the screen is an example adoption paper of one of the local Minnetonka Plymouth rotor races, where they give away, one of the prizes is a new truck and other prizes for the local community. We are aware of 3 major events in Minnesota that raise over $100,000 per year for charity, and they are in Moorhead, Minnesota, a hospice center. But right now, technically, they must run their race in Fargo, North Dakota to comply with the current law, but they'd like to move their event to Minnesota. Wilmer of the United Way, they're at a conference this week. They would have liked to have been here. They hold their event in July, and so there is some time of the essence with this house file, if we could, just because between sponsors and media and fundraising the community, it takes more than typically 4, 5, 6 months to put the event on. And with us today are Frank Weir, president-elect, and Bob Prestofilippo, who is a board member from the Plymouth Minnetonka Rotary. And I'd just like to have President-elect Frank Weir just take a couple of minutes to talk about the positive impacts of their Rotary event, their duck race. I want to thank the committee for their time, and if you have any questions, I'll be available at the end.
Thank you.
Great. Governor Westerberg, members of the committee, my name is Frank Weir, and I am president-elect of the Minnetonka Plymouth Rotary Club.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. This is a pretty important thing for us because we have been using this for the past 4 years as our only fundraiser. In those 4 years, we have brought in over $150,000. After expenses, all of the money goes back into the community in one way or another. I would like to share with you some of those organizations that we support. We have a STRIVE program, and they have we give them scholarships. In case you're unaware, STRIVE is for seniors in high school that are not quite up to par where they should be, and we give them some impetus to improve their lot in life, if you will. We also give regular scholarships to students who are on the other end of the spectrum. We give money to the Minnesota Organization of Fetal Alcohol Syndrome. We've given money to an organization in the Wayzata School called YES, and they do a couple things. They go into the inner city and work in soup kitchens, and they also do have a program called Study Buddies, where they work with students in the primary grades to help them keep up with things. We have sponsors that cover all of the expenses of the race. What's very important to us is that this bill gets passed rather quickly, because we would like to run a race again this year, and there is a lot of preparation that has to be done, and we can't do that until this legislation is enacted. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate your testimony. If we'll maybe take the last testifier, too, and then see if there are any questions for the group. Okay. Are there any questions for our panel? Representative Hilty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do have a question about the wording of the amendment. On page 2, paragraph 4, lines 1 through 3. As Representative Junkie described the race in Wilmer on Green Lake, is it really accurate to say that the outcome is based on an event under the control of the organization? I mean, doesn't the outcome of this particular event depend on which way the wind blows? And is that under control of the organization?
Mr. Chair, I have the Gambling Control Board here for technical questions like Representative Hilton's.
Well, Mr. Chair, I'm sure if anyone knows which way the wind blows, it would be...
Mr. Barrett, do you want to add anything to this?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hilty, I think that was a compliment. Thank you. This was difficult. I mean, on behalf of the organization and Representative Junkie, I know when this first came up, we looked at the bad guys. The word was, if something's fun, it must be illegal. What we were dealing with was some old language raffles that we always associate with the tickets, so we worked hard with some of the changes. To this point, though, there's a lot of things that could happen out there in the world of calling it a raffle. And so we were concerned that by using cannot be manipulated, meaning you can't take a hose and literally push the duck ahead. You know, you can push the water to keep it, but you can't touch any of the tickets or the ducks in that sense. The other point, based on the outcome of the event, not under the control of the organization. The organization that we will issue the license or permit to, they are in charge. They're responsible in that respect. And so they get a vendor to assist with the actual event, that's fine. What we're focusing on, and this was a good example last Sunday, the Daytona 500, we don't want to have a raffle that's based on the finish of Jeff Gordon's car. That's not under their control. It's those kinds of things. So that's what we're getting at in terms of that language and why it needs to be under the control of the organization that we regulate and would issue the permit to, regardless of the wind.
And Mr. Barrett, this raffles are under your preview?
Mr. Chair, yes.
And could you tell me, how is eligibility determined?
Mr. Chair, eligibility in terms of who, the organization or the event?
Eligibility for the event, for people to participate in the event, how is that determined?
Mr. Chairman, as far as eligibility, because originally we had a line in there as far as only eligible participants, and yet we're kind of left with who's eligible. And so we leave it to the organizations that is conducting the event to make a determination, whether it's in a house rule, so to speak, or in the brochure, who's not eligible. If the folks, the vendors, obviously, I would think, are not eligible to participate, but we do allow that, the organization, to decide who's eligible and who's not.
Okay. Any other questions? Representative Erickson.
Mr. Barrett, what other types of raffles are there besides the ducks?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, thank you. Very good question, because we anticipate there's going to be more. We've gone away from the strict ticket stub requirement, and that's why you see it down on the second page of the amendment, beginning line 8, item C. Methods of selecting winning entries from a raffle other than prescribed in rule may be used with prior written approval. So in other words, we're not coming back next year with another unique. We'd at least delegate that to the board to determine, is there total randomness in the selection? Is it unable to be manipulated? Those kinds of things. But I will take the respect of the committee to talk about it in the event that is also out there. It's in the agricultural world, but it's called the cow drop, where they just get a pasture and they grid.
Careful.
So they grid the pasture, and wherever the cow relieves himself, that is one that we would say no, that doesn't qualify, because there is the ability to manipulate. You know, they could have somebody on the phone. Very serious, you wonder what we get into. But there's a number of other activities that folks would love to call raffles, and that we find ourselves in. This is a case where if we found a solution, I think we did, to allow the activity. We want to make sure organizations can raise money and make it fun. Yet, and to this point, the one that they were going to run, they had a top prize potentially of $1 million. Well, that goes well beyond the limits, and so they at least cut that back to what was confined in the law. And the other things should allow the organization to have a fun event, keep it honest, keep the integrity there, and raise some money.
Are there any other questions? Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Chair Westerberg. My apologies to Kathleen. She doesn't want me to ask so many questions. I'm just wondering if, because we're the only state, is our language patterned after other states? Maybe Mr. Schechter could answer that. And what was occurring that was in violation of the law, Mr. Barrett?
Thank you, ma'am. Mr. Barrett and his division have worked hard to formulate this language, and yes, it has been modified, taken from other states. We've actually had to do the same thing we've done here in about 7 other states because of old laws. So we have some case history of using language that works well for those states. We provided that to the division. I think they've looked at that and adapted it for your use.
And Mr. Chair, Representative, to the point of what was different, the old language pretty much just talked about a ticket stub, and this has no way of being a ticket stub where somebody's name, address, contact information. So we allow a certificate of participation that would be retained offshore and be able to use that. But it also gives us an opportunity, because the language has been very old, and we've seen examples where sometimes a charitable organization will, in their house rule, so to speak, imply that the person that buys the ticket has to be present in order to win. And that's one of the key things in our rules that's a no-no. So we thought, you know, this is a good opportunity to put in a statute what some of we had in rule.
Thank you, Mr. Barrett. Representative Zellers.
That was my exact question about the winner being present. And I assume Representative Junkie, because of campaign finance laws, we don't get a ducky to take home then?
Representative Chair and members, we're going to do our best to get you one of those ducks.
Okay.
And I'll pay for them.
Sounds good. Okay, any other questions? Actually, is there anyone in the audience who would like to speak for or against this particular bill? Okay, any other questions from members?
Well,
please, I would have to ask you to come to the microphone and please state.
I'd
like to have you state your name for the tape and tell us who you represent.
Sure. Pam Holsinger Fuchs, just a citizen. I'm from Cookston, Minnesota, though. And actually, we've been running a Kentucky Derby for about the past 5 or 6 years as one of our major fundraisers for Habitat for Humanity. And it has been a wonderful event, very family-oriented, as part of a festival that we have. So certainly I was shocked to hear that we might not be able to do that, or that we might have been operating illegally, although we did fill out a raffle form and did all that. So anyway.
Well, thank you for your testimony. Okay. Any further questions or comments? Okay, and that's what I'm thinking. Okay, Representative Turkey, I will renew my motion to move 803 as amended to lay it over for possible inclusion in the omnibus technical bill. And thank you very much for
thank
your
you,
presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've been calling it the rubber ducky bill, but Ann Rest doesn't want to call it that. So you can call it whatever you want. But whatever it is, we appreciate your time and your effort. So.
Well, thank you. It sounds like a very viable and promising project.
And we'll try and get your staff a duck, because she was winking and waving at me as she wanted. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, Representative Broad. Representative Erickson, would you be willing to move House File 934 for us?
Mr. Chair, I'll move House File 934 to be before this committee.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. I asked her already. She'd rather move it on.
Mr. Chair, I will amend that motion to not only have the bill before us, but recommend it to pass. And does it go to the General Register?
No, this will be to the full committee.
Oh, yes, into the full committee on regulated industries.
Okay, that's the motion before us. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Okay, the motion fails. Representative Broad.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. House File 934 before you essentially appropriates $150,000 per biennium to the North Star Problem Gambling Alliance. The bill also requires, for your just to note, a 50% match by in terms of private fundraising by that organization. The organization's uses of the dollars are for the purposes of increasing public awareness to the problem of compulsive gambling. They are used for education and training for individuals and organizations that provide effective treatment services to problem gamblers and their families, and for research related to problem gambling. One of the things about this organization that intrigues me is the group of people, the broad spectrum of people that they have sitting down at the table together talking about problem gambling. I'll list a number of this alliance, and you're actually getting some information in your hands that you can take a look through. But at the table together talking about this issue are representatives of the Minnesota Lottery, the Minnesota Indian Gaming Association, Independent Tribal Communities, Allied Charities of Minnesota, Canterbury Park, Recovering Compulsive Gamblers, those affected by compulsive gambling, such as family, retail, banking, institutions, the judicial system, and other groups that have been affected. In addition, the North Star Alliance has also brought together those who provided a door to recovery or help, researchers, school counselors, clergy, physicians, social workers, and treatment providers. As you can see, this is a pretty neat group talking about these issues. Here with me today, I have both Reverend Lance Holthusen, who is the Executive Director of the North Star Alliance, and Don Feeney with the Lottery.
Thank you, Representative. Whichever testifier would like to go first, please state your name and proceed with your testimony.
Okay. My name is Lance Holthusen. I'm the Executive Director of the North Star Problem Gambling Alliance and full-time parish pastor in southwestern Minnesota. I appreciate the comments that you made, Representative Broad, and Mr. Chair, appreciate very much the opportunity to be before this committee to speak on behalf of this bill. The I think the most important thing to know about this particular organization is that it is a very intentionally gambling neutral organization. We do not lobby or in any way advocate for or against gambling as an activity in the state, but represent people who have a problem with gaming. As was demonstrated in the introduction of the bill before us, and I think has been experienced by many of you, most of us from the state, gaming can be an awful lot of fun and has provided a lot of opportunities for people in various ways in the state. The concern, however, is for the person who cannot deal with gaming as an activity. A person who, for one reason or another, becomes a compulsive gambler and has to go through the various kinds of situations that provide extreme hurt for themselves and for other people. Our mission is to serve the problem gambler and those people who are hurt by problem gaming. One other comment, we are the Minnesota affiliate of the National Council on Problem Gambling, have been for the last 2 years now, I think that the materials that you have before you are an example of the kinds of things that we do. We are responsible for the annual Problem Gambling Awareness Week conference for care providers. You have one of the brochures, the yellow one, shows the agenda for this particular year. We do a newsletter that I think is we're very proud of, and you can see copies of that. We are very strong advocates for increasing research in the area of gambling and problem gambling. Single greatest need that we have found is good information. We do a lot of talking about gambling, we've been at the industry of gambling in this state for some 15 years now, but one of the critical needs that we have is understanding more about the impact of gambling, as well as the impact of dollars that are invested in dealing with gambling issues in this state. That's one of the things that we would like to help address. That's, I think, the end of the comments that I'd like to make. Don Feeney is on our board, is the Director of Research and Planning for the Minnesota State Lottery, and he has some comments as well.
Thank you, Mr. Holthusen, and welcome to the committee, Don Feeney. Mr. Feeney, please state your name and tell us who you represent.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Don Feeney. I am the Research and Planning Director for the Minnesota State Lottery. I am also on the Board of Directors of the North Star Problem Gambling Alliance. Mr. Chairman, I think, given your time limitations, I'm prepared to forego my remarks and just stand for questions at this point.
Thank you very much. Okay, Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Chair Westerberg. To our minister, I'm sorry, I didn't catch your name.
Holthusen, Lance.
Yes, thank you. So are you saying that you don't collect data yet from your program so that we could find out the number of addictions that have occurred and have been, taken care of through your organization, and to what type of gambling they claim they're addicted? Have you not collected any of that data?
Mr. Holthusen.
Representative, I think I'd like to call on Don to respond to that.
Mr. Feeney?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Erickson, the couple of points. One, we do not directly provide treatment. Treatment is provided through paid for by the Department of Human Services. That's not something with which we are really qualified to do. And related to that, we are currently an all-volunteer organization, and we do not have any paid staff at the moment, and so that really limits our ability to work in areas like that. I know that the Department of Human Services at this point is interested in tracking the outcomes of the treatment they have paid for, and in terms of the number of people who are the prevalence of gambling addictions, which you asked about. That is a study that would cost, to do properly, I am guessing, about $200,000, which is well beyond anybody's budget capability at this point.
How do you gauge the results then of what you're doing? On what basis?
Mr. Chairman, are you speaking particularly to the treatment of addictions? That's an excellent question. That's something that those of us who have been working with the Department of Human Services have been advocating for, and I know that they have recently issued a request for proposals to conduct an evaluation of treatment. I don't know where they are in that process.
Representative Broad.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Erickson, I think one thing that I just wanted to reiterate or touch on a little bit more was the fact that this public awareness and the education aspect of what this organization does is really hard to quantify, but is extremely important nonetheless. While the quantification of the outcomes in terms of treatment are extremely important, like I said, the focus on this organization is not the treatment itself, but bringing people together to discuss the issue and talk about education and ways to further that research.
Mr. Chair, there's one more point I'd like to make, if I could.
Mr. Holthusen.
If you look at the area of the whole area of addictions in the mental illness field, you look at where we were with our understanding, public acceptance, programs available, monies invested in drugs and alcohol in the 50s and 60s, that's where we are today in the field of gambling. Part of that is by necessity because it just doesn't move all that fast. Now, given we can learn a lot from what we have learned in drugs and alcohol and other forms of addictions, but the understanding, the public understanding, the acceptance of problem gambling, the legitimacy of gambling addiction, and on and on and on. We are today where we were with drugs and alcohol in the 60s. We want to change that. That won't happen overnight, but we need all of the horses that we can pulling to do that. One way is certainly being worked on through the State Department of Human Services, but we also need other venues, non-governmental venues, that bring all of the parties to the table.
Okay. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Chair Westerberg. Sir, how can you increase public awareness, though, if you aren't aware of the data from the treatment centers? Certainly, you must have information forwarded to your organization to even have discussions such as you must have to fulfill your mission. So I'm wondering, do you solicit data from, let's say, Hazleton, if they deal with gambling addiction?
Mr. Holthusen.
Yes, Mr. Chair and Representative Erickson. One of the ways that we deal with that is through our public awareness conferences and workshops. You have one example in front of you. I have some other brochures from the 2 years prior to this year that I can also pass out. The participants, the resource participants in that particular conference and in previous conferences helps to provide some of that data. Speakers represent many of the entities that you just referred to, including the University of Minnesota. Hazleton has not had an extensive history in the area of gambling addiction, as you probably know, but Project Turnabout, the only residential program in the state, and other outpatient and non-residential programs such as Fairview, Duluth, St. Cloud, number of private providers are represented as resource people in those activities. And we also do that through our newsletter.
I'll follow Representative Erickson.
Yes, thank you, Chair Westerberg. So to fulfill mission number two, promoting the widespread availability of treatment, if I were to go to a casino, would I find brochures that would tell me of resources I could seek out if I know of someone who is addicted or if I felt myself addicted?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Erickson, I believe, I do not know this for certain, but I believe that each of the casinos has, at a minimum, the state's toll-free problem gambling helpline posted at the facility. In terms of brochures and so on, what they have, that I honestly don't know.
Okay, any other questions from the committee? Representative Atkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Broad or either of the witnesses, do you have a budget for how you're going to spend the money, or are you just looking for a check that'll be for, and I appreciate laying out that it's for problem gaming, education, training, and research. Is there actually a budget so we can see how the money is going to be spent?
Yes, I do have Mr. A budget, a suggested budget for the two-year period, and we can get that to you promptly. I don't have that with me.
Okay. Anyone in the audience who would wish to testify for or against this bill? Any other questions from members here at the table? Okay, and thank you very much for your testimony. We appreciate it. And hearing none, we'll renew Representative Erickson's motion to pass House File 934 and move it on to the full Regulated Industries Committee. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? So passes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Okay, members. The next order of business here is House 514, and I'm going to move House 514. I'm the author in the bill. And I'll call your attention to an amendment. Has it been passed out? While the amendment's being passed out, members, I just want to, I'll invite the state lottery, or the lottery, to the table here to do some discussing on this particular bill if we get our lottery commissioner up here. And members, I just want to point out that this bill is the result of the task force that was put together by legislation back in 2004. And with that, we'll let our lottery commissioner do the introduction to the bill. In order to get, does everyone have the amendment at this time? The amendment's a technical amendment clarifying how the operating expenses are to be handled here. And maybe what I'm going to do here is I'll ask the commissioner to explain the amendment before we vote on the amendment. Would you like to take a shot at that, or do we need Mr. Gino? Fragnito to help us with that. What's the very good. Welcome, our commissioner.
Clint Harris, excuse me. Good afternoon, Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Clint Harris. I'm the executive director of the lottery. And I prepared some general remarks about the efforts of the task force this past 2004, the summer and fall. But to the amendment, the amendment effectively clarifies that the expenses of the board that is the recommendation of the task force is to be paid for by the lottery out of the lottery's operating budget, and only the expenses related to those responsibilities in the subdivision.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Harris. Members, I'm just going to call the A1 amendment. It does not have A1 on the top of it. Is everyone familiar with what we're speaking about here? You have the same amendment. And I'm going to ask to have that amended onto the 514 bill. Is there any discussion or opposition to the amendment? And hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, no. The amendment is adopted. Director Harris, please proceed with your testimony here, or your introduction here would probably be in order.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess in my role today, even though I'm the director of the lottery, I'm talking about the governance of me and the lottery, so I am speaking on behalf of the task force at this point. The 2004 legislature created the task force to study and make recommendations regarding the future organization and profitability of the state lottery. The task force was given two charges by the legislature. First, it was to consider whether the lottery should be part of another state agency, be accountable to a new oversight board, continue under its current structure, or operate under some other alternative structure. Secondly, the task force was asked to consider the feasibility and desirability of measurable performance goals for the lottery. Current lottery governance. Right now, there are two key changes that was made by the 2004 legislature. The first is that the director now serves at the pleasure of the governor, is appointed by the governor, and serves at his or her pleasure. And the second key change that occurred was a spending cap. The governor, as part of his budget recommendation, recommends a maximum amount that the lottery be permitted to spend on operating and capital expenses. This does not include direct costs such as prizes, retailer commissions, and the cost of producing and distributing scratch and online tickets. The task force charged that the lottery staff do a little research to determine other lottery organizations, or to look at other lottery organizations around the country, and what other structures are out there. There is a report that's available. I believe you folks have received a copy of the report, and you can go into much more detail in that report. The outcome of the task force represents basically findings and recommendations, and I'll just quickly go through them. There's four of them. The first finding is that the lottery differs in significant ways from most state agencies. The lottery does not exist to provide services, but to raise revenues. Unlike the Department of Revenue, there are no laws that forces ticket purchases. The lottery faces competition when it's out there selling its lottery products, and so it needs greater flexibility and freedom to be able to react to opportunities for additional revenues and sales. The task force recommended that the lottery should not be merged with an existing state agency. The task force recommended that lottery should continue to be exempt from certain restrictions imposed on other agencies, such as spending limits. A spending limit is appropriate rather than a line item appropriations, which would deprive the lottery of the flexibility needed to run like a business. The task force recommends that the lottery and the Department of Finance continue to explore ways to improve transparency and efficiency of lottery's financial records and reporting. The second finding, the task force notes that the lottery has made great strides in accountability and fiscal responsibility. Today's lottery is a very different organization than the one portrayed in the 2004 legislative audit. All 49 audit recommendations have been addressed. The lottery reduced its workforce by 25%, and it ended fiscal year 2004 with the first ever $100 million contribution and revenues to the state. The recommendation is that the lottery should continue its efforts to be more accountable and fiscally responsible. While significant progress has been made, it needs to remain vigilant and continue to look for ways to cut costs and remain accountable. A third finding by the task force, there is a need for meaningful outside oversight of lottery operations. It needs to act like a business, but recognizes that it is a public enterprise. It relies on the public's perception of its benefits and integrity. The task force recommendation is the legislature should establish a board to oversee the activities of lottery, which is why we're here today. The fourth finding, performance goals for the lottery. The task force recommendation is the legislature should not establish measurable performance goals for lottery proceeds and operations. However, the director, in consultation with the lottery board, should include measurable goals in its annual strategic plan and discuss and set target goals for lottery performance. While it may be difficult to compare one lottery to another, it is important for the lottery to look to other lotteries as a guideline to its performance. So, very briefly, the lottery board provided for House Bill 514, which you have in front of you. In a nutshell, it creates a board of seven citizens appointed by the governor with the advice and consent of the Senate. These seven members have to have specific experiences, such as one has to have a legal background, an accounting and financial expertise background, marketing and advertising expertise, and other complex business expertise. The board's responsibilities will include to review annual budgets, propose lottery rules, strategic and marketing plans, lottery performance, the director's performance, review financial affairs and contract for an annual audit of the lottery.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Erickson.
I hate to interrupt, but this bill shouldn't be before our committee other than to hear a report from the task force, because we don't have the purview to approve boards. This needs to be referred to government operations.
Eventually it will need to go there. As far as...
We can't vote on this, Mr. Chair.
And thank you, Representative Erickson. We will not be voting on this bill.
I was getting worried here that we were going to approve this board.
Would you please proceed with your testimony?
My final comment beyond the responsive board is that the lottery director's powers and duties, the lottery director needs to have the ability to administer the lottery on a day-to-day basis and to be accountable for its operation. So that's the extent of my comments and overview of the task force's work.
Thank you, Director Harris. It's come to our attention, too, there is a one-word amendment that we'd like to discuss here on page 2. Line 14. Actually, that's on line 13. It begins at the end of line 13, adding a comma after the word security, deleting on line 14 the word or, and after information security, adding a comma, and then adding the word or before the word to, or after the comma. So it would read on line 13, any committee of the board that relate to the lottery security, comma, information security, comma, or to evaluate the performance of the director may be closed to the public. Is there any discussion? Mr. Harris, do you want to... Do you have any comments on this clarification?
Yes, I'm familiar. That was introduced when this was introduced in the Senate. It just clarifies that section. Better clarifies.
Are there any comments to the amendment? I'd be willing to... I'll accept the amendment as a friendly amendment.
Well, Mr. Chair, may I ask Mr. Harris, in what committee was this bill heard? Thank you, Chair. In what bill was this heard in the Senate? I mean, in what committee?
The gaming...
Mr. Harris?
I'm sorry. Mr. Chairman, Representative Erickson, it was in the Senate Gaming Division or Committee.
Senator Vickerman's.
Senator Vickerman's.
Doesn't he also have government operations, though? Is that right?
He has ag.
Oh, he has ag. Does he have government operations, too? Or how do they? No? Representative Hilty, you and I have served on government operations. Doesn't this have to originate in government operations? Because it's creation of a board? I'm confused.
Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson, it certainly has to go to government operations, but I don't think that there's an established order in which a bill is to proceed.
Okay, members. As far as, again, I accepted the amendment as a friendly amendment, House File 514, and is there any other discussion on House 514?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Atkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question. I don't know if it's for Mr. Harris or, frankly, for the folks that recommended this, but I note that the language only gives the power for this board to review, not to approve. And I find that a bit unusual for a gubernatorial appointment then certified by the Senate. I'm trying to think of any other body. We just went through the Regent to vote, for example, Met Council appointments. There's a variety of appointments that the governor makes that go through a process, and I'm curious why this board, to the extent it's established, would only have the ability to review and not approve. We may as well call it, I suppose, an advisory board if we're not going to. And I'm just wondering if there's somebody here that can address why that would be, or if it's simply meant to be but wasn't included in the language.
Mr. Haas, would you be willing to help us here?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Bill Haas. Representative Atkins, I served as co-chair of the task force. We had quite a discussion, and we felt that we did not want the board to govern what the lottery director does. We want the lottery director to have the freedom to run his operation as a business, but we would have oversight by the board. We'd have review of the policies that he's implementing and the programs he wants to implement, but we're trusting his judgment to run the operation with his knowledge and his professionalism.
Representative Atkins.
Mr. Chair, I appreciate that. Representative Haas and I have spent a lot of time together today. Every committee I'm in, I think he's testifying in. And I appreciate that, Representative Haas.
Worked on a lot of issues, Representative Atkins, as you know. So I'm just in the wrong place at the right time today.
I'm glad to know that it's a purposeful comment or omission rather than by accident. And perhaps it's just someplace in the purpose that it ought to be mentioned, though, that it's an advisory commission, that the primary purpose, as I understand it, would be to make sure that the operations of the lottery are more public in nature. I suspect that is the main goal or main objective of this, is to demonstrate that, you know, here's what the lottery is doing. It's kind of one of the issues that got us as a state into a situation that we were in previously, is that there weren't enough people, and the public, certainly the media, not aware of what the lottery was doing. So the more light that we can shine on it, the better. But it'd be nice, maybe when this arrives, wherever it's going next, that it state that as the purpose, so that there's no misunderstanding that this group is going to have approval over what the lottery director does.
And Mr. Chair, I believe in our report we put a definition of advisory in there, and because we had about a half a meeting on the advisory definition and how the board would work in relationship to the director. So it received quite a bit of attention.
Director Harris, did you want to add something to that?
Mr. Chairman, the primary responsibility is advisory in essence, but they do have authority in the sense that they are the ones that are going to contract for the annual audit of the lottery. That is now, you know, right now the director has that responsibility, and if this passes, it would become the board's responsibility. So I think that was in addition to Mr. Haas said that contributed to the decision to remove the word advisory.
Mr. Harris, can you point out where that is in the bill, on the audit? I saw that in the recommendation. I read the report. I'm just looking for it in the bill itself.
It's Mr. Chair, it's in line 4.4, page 4, line 4.
Thank you, Mr. Harris. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Are there any other questions on House File 514? Okay. Thank you very much for your testimony. I renew my motion to lay 514 over as amended for possible inclusion in the omnibus technical bill. And Representative Erickson, I certainly understand your concerns. I think it's important, you know, that we'll see exactly where this has to go in order to get it moving in the right channels in order to get it completion in time. As far as the next bill that we're going to take up is Representative Thiessen, House File 88. See here.
Maybe we should ask Representative Haas if he'd like to.
He's running away. Okay, well then, we'll move on to Representative Lencesi. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chairman Westerberg and members. If I might say, Representative Vandeveer also has a very similar, I think a one-word difference bill. And Chairman Westerberg, I think he did talk to you yesterday. And now that I see Representative Thiessen, and I'm open to whatever you'd like to do, I know that Representative Vandeveer wanted to testify with me.
Yeah.
If that's okay, then we will proceed with Representative Thiessen then.
Thank you.
Representative Thiessen, welcome to the committee. Representative Atkins would like to move House File 88 for possible inclusion in the technical omnibus bill. All those in favor of that signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Okay, we have the bill before us.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thanks for indulging my schedule. I hope I didn't hold things up too much.
No, you didn't.
This legislation, House File 88, is addressing these lottery pools. It's a business idea and entity that's just kind of come into play in Minnesota in the last year or two, and so it's kind of a new issue for us, and this is, I think it's important to start at the beginning and saying this isn't really about anybody that's been a bad actor at all. It's not going at that, but it is a new actor, and I think it's something that merits and warrants some attention by this committee and by the legislature. So that's kind of the way I'm coming at this. I'm not wed to particular details on this, but I think we need to get some of these issues. And I think in the packet there should be two sheets. One is there's an article kind of giving some background information, and the other is a disclosure, but not a disclosure, but it says consumer information disclosure sample on there. Do you guys have that?
Yeah. Okay.
And you'll see there, this is one of the things that kind of concerned me and kind of brought it to my attention, is that if you look at the numbers here, and there may be some reasons, there may be reasons for this, but if you look, for instance, at the first pool that you can, it's a 50-person pool, and each participant pays in $16. So that's a pot of $800 that goes to PowerPick. And with that, they will purchase in 1 week two 64 chances in each of the each of the drawings that they have each year. So that's 128 chances to win. Now, if you went out and bought 128 chances, it would cost you $128 because, you know, these are a dollar a ticket. But Power Pick did $800 for that. And so there's a very big price discrepancy here with regard to that. And, you know, again, there may be reasons for that discrepancy, that difference. But I think one thing is it's important to recognize that that exists and that people truly understand that difference. So what this legislation does is it really is trying to get some parity of the Power Pick entity with other gambling that we have in the state. And there's a couple things that it does. One is it requires registration with the state and some Department of Public Safety oversight to allow a review of books and records, that kind of thing. The second thing is that with the lottery, any unclaimed prizes kind of revert to the general fund. With the Power Pick, or with these type of pools, as I understand the business model, and some may be different, but in some of the business models, if a prize goes unclaimed for a year, and basically how it works is Power Pick buys the tickets, so they're the actual buyer of record. If they win, they are the ones that get paid, and then they got to go out and pay the pool members. They got to find the pool members and pay them their share of the winnings. So we're kind of trusting this entity to accomplish that. But if they can't find someone and they're unable to locate one of the pool members, they keep that money after a year. So that's different than a typical lottery retailer because typically the money would go back to the state. And so one of the things it does is requires unclaimed prizes to revert back to the state like any other lottery retailer. A third thing it does is it requires disclosure of the odds, kind of similar to what is listed out on this piece of paper so people truly understand, and not just the odds, but also, more importantly, not the odds, but the cost of a lottery ticket versus the cost of it purchased through Power Pick. So people truly understand what's going on and can make an informed and intelligent decision. And the last major piece is that in Minnesota, we don't allow people to gamble on a credit card. We require it by cash or check, and as I understand, that also includes debit cards. I didn't realize that until preparing for this. But basically, you got to have the money there to be able to gamble with it, as opposed to kind of borrowing it to play. And that's kind of our state's policy. Now, there may be pros and cons about that, and that's an issue maybe this committee will take up. But my sense is that if that is our state policy, and it clearly is right now, that should also apply in the context of the Power Pick. And so this would require that you play using a cash or check or cash pick mechanism. And currently, as I understand Power Pick's business, that's not the case. And some of it is done over the Internet, which is one of the reasons for that, which raises, you know, some other issues. But those are kind of the four things. It's really about parity. It's really about disclosure and information for people. We're not trying to put anybody out of business, which, you know, some states have taken that approach. I think, there's a legitimate case to be made here that this provides some people with service. But we just want to make sure that they're doing it in a way that we can control and that people that are playing can understand. So that's the bill.
Thank you, Representative Thiessen. Do you have any testifiers on the bill?
I don't.
Are there any questions from members? Representative Zeller.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Thiessen. So is this basically gambling on gambling? Are you gambling on... are you gambling on gambling?
I've never thought of it that way. I suppose you could see that because you could take the chance that someone wouldn't recover their prize, if that's what you're getting at. Arguably, that I don't think... You know, I've talked to the representatives, at least of this group. I don't think that that's what they're thinking about, but certainly they could make money off the fact that other people are gambling, and they certainly are making money off the fact that other people are gambling, but they could, you know, in terms of keeping the prize. One of the other things the bill does is says they can't hold a stake in any of the pools that they have, so that kind of goes to the same issue. Did that answer your question? I'm sorry, I don't know if that was...
I'm with you. I didn't know that. So basically they're going to someone to buy a hunk of lottery tickets that you could just go and buy at the SA in the corner by yourself.
Right.
Okay. Any further questions? Is there anyone in the audience who would like to testify for or against this particular bill? welcome to the committee. Please state your name and tell us who you represent.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Paul Cassidy. I'm with the law firm of Leonard Street and Diner. I'm here on behalf of PowerPIC, who I believe this legislation is aimed at. For those of you who don't know, PowerPIC operates in three states, Arizona, Michigan, and Minnesota. They have offices in Anoka. That's where their physical location is, in Minnesota. I'm here today in opposition of House File 88, obviously. The legislation appears to be an unnecessary solution looking for a problem. PowerPIC's been in business offering lottery pooling services for over 10 years and has never been a subject of even one customer complaint. In any of the three states they operate in, PowerPIC's customers have spent an average of $40, only $40 a month, both their satisfaction with their pocketbooks. Now number over 300 regular customers in the state of Minnesota alone. Let me explain what PowerPIC is and what it isn't. PowerPIC acts in the same capacity as someone who organizes an office pool. They find people to pool, they collect people's money, and they purchase the tickets, they check for winners, and they collect and distribute the winnings, and they notify players what their numbers are and what their winnings are. PowerPIC does all that and much more, and they collect a fee for it. A typical PowerPIC customer buys one share of a pooling arrangement that consists of 25 or 50 shares. For example, the most common transaction is that a player pays $29 for the opportunity to participate in a pool of 50 shares. The fee buys each player the chance to share in 400 tickets and 1/50th of any prize winnings with the other players in the pool. Just like an office pool, except you're paying someone a fee for the convenience and the service of running the pool and not having to run to the convenience store every Wednesday night and Saturday. PowerPIC purchases the tickets from a local licensed retailer, gives each player their nightly numbers, tracks the numbers for each drawing, and gives each customer a detailed transaction report each and every week. The bottom line is that PowerPIC offers a lottery service entertainment package that gives customers a convenient way to purchase their lottery tickets each week. So, what do we do with players' winnings? On average, we're talking about winning transactions that range between $3 and $5 for each player. PowerPIC provides each customer an account summary after each drawing, that's twice a week, that shows the player's account balance, and most players then use that balance to apply to their next play. PowerPIC automatically sends players a check if the person's winnings are over $50. They have a contractual arrangement when they start the process, when a player signs up for the service, that disposes to them in their membership packets, that after 1 year, the player if the player has not played and has not claimed the prize money, it reverts back to PowerPIC. Advertising. Representative Thiessen has some disclosure requirements in this bill also. Take a look at PowerPIC.com when you have the opportunity. The website will show you all of the answers and disclosures that are given to players in their membership packets, including an 8.5x11 pie chart that shows exactly how a player's money is spent on purchasing tickets, overhead costs, operating costs, and even profits. Not many businesses do that voluntarily. Including the suggested disclosure would not be feasible in very small ads. Obviously, the larger the ad, the more it costs. Adding more disclosure language simply is cost prohibitive for a business like this. As I stated earlier, PowerPIC already provides each person with a separate 8.5x11 chart explaining where all the money is paid out and where it's allocated. In addition, each person receives a handbook that contains all the disclosures suggested in this bill. The website also includes all this information. Calculating the price of each ticket. I have to disagree with the way the bill calculates how much each ticket costs. The language mandated in the bill to calculate and disclose the cost is flawed. Simply, PowerPIC players pay $29 for 400 chances to share in a pool of 50 players. That calculates out to a cost of a little more than 7 cents per ticket per chance. That to calculate it any other way would be terribly misleading. The cost to each person is only a few pennies per ticket. That is the entire purpose of pooling. The calculation in the bill is simplistic. It doesn't include any of the other benefits that players receive for entertainment purposes. PowerPIC tells the public what they pay and what they receive, and the public always gets everything they were promised and more. PowerPIC members also receive, as I mentioned earlier, the 8.5x11 pie chart in their membership kit, requiring the disclosure of other competitive options, which I believe is also in the bill, dictates that lottery retailers should probably also tell players that they have the option to pay PowerPIC and have more purchasing power and have more opportunities and chances to win at a lottery and share in prize winnings.
credit cards. We'll probably have this debate this year and next, now that we've gone through the Lottery Reorganization Task Force, and it's, I believe, has been mentioned and discussed in a number of those meetings. The reality is a person can spend $1,000 or more a day on the lottery at a retail store. All they have to do is go to a convenience store, turn around, go to the ATM machine with their credit card, pull out $1,000, pay cash for 1,000 lottery tickets, and out the door they go. It's as simple as that. With the Power Pick, the most expensive lottery pool is $40 a week, and the average person spends only $10 a week. It's nearly impossible for someone to expend excessive amounts in a lottery club. It simply is not conducive to that. With the Power Pick Club, no one can spend more than what each of the other members of the group are willing to spend. You have to have an even number of 25 or 50 participants. The result is that no members have ever fallen to the evils of gambling that we're aware of, but running up debts, it just doesn't happen with the lottery club. Finally, credit cards. As was cited in a recent Minneapolis Star Tribune article, found that more Americans now use cards than use cash. It's just a simple fact of life that we're becoming a cashless and a checkless society. With that, Mr. Chairman, I think I'll conclude my testimony and I stand for any questions. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Cassidy. Are there any questions for the testifier or Representative Zeller?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Cassidy. So now I'm going to have to revise my remarks. This is actually smart gambling. If it's 7 cents a ticket, rather than paying a dollar for the ticket if I go to the convenience store, I have cut my gambling costs considerably.
I'd rather not comment on the odds of the lottery. I mean, my client never makes any promises about anything. With the Power Pick Players Club, what most of the promotion is that it's fun, it's entertaining, and someone will do the organizing for you, and you might have a few more chances to participate.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Chair. Mr. Berg. Mr. Cassidy, is there another organization other than Power Pick operating in Minnesota?
I don't believe there are any other lottery service businesses like this operating in Minnesota physically, but I do think if you get on the internet and do a Google search for lottery tickets or lottery clubs or whatever, lottery pooling services, you're going to get a lot of hits, and you're going to hit a lot of illegitimate businesses that either operate in this country or offshore. And I believe that Power Pick is one that they obviously have a fiscal presence and run a very legitimate business and something that their customers enjoy very much.
Representative Zeller?
I apologize. And you said about the unclaimed earnings. I know that was one of the things that we were concerned about. I apologize. I was reading while you were saying that. How do the percentages that go back?
Percentages, I'm not sure, but I'll get you that information. Excuse me, Representative Zeller.
Sure.
But on average, players will win what's between $3 and $5, we find. And players that do not want to continue, that is obviously kept in their account for 1 year. During that year, they are notified repeatedly that they're maintaining an account balance. At the initiation of their membership, they're told that if they don't play for a year and they happen to have an account balance, that money will revert to Power Pick. So they are disclosed up front, and that's the way it'll transact.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Chair Westerberg. Chair Westerberg, do you think we're allowed to ask the lottery if they have an opinion on this?
I'm sure that would be fine. Are they still here?
Yes, Mr. Harris is here.
Mr. Harris, please join us. Please join us.
What happens when you come to committee?
We really appreciate your expertise. What's your opinion on this?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Erickson, my opinion is I don't have an opinion. I don't have an opinion. I guess I want to correct the statement that Representative Thiessen said that these are lottery retailers. They're not a lottery retailer. They're effectively a person buying tickets on behalf of a lot of other people. The only comment I'd like to make is I question the attaching this bill or the law that would come out of it if passed to the lottery statutes. This is a regulatory issue, and to me it should be attached to the Department of Public Safety's laws.
Appreciate the insight. Any other questions or comments for the testifiers? Well, first of all, Mr. Cassidy here, how many customers do you have approximately?
Mr. Chairman, approximately 300 in the state of Minnesota.
And on those customers, you track, I mean, things like bad debt, if someone was to be have problems with bad debt, but there is no problem at all with the customers that you're the people you're currently working with.
Mr. Chairman, I believe my testimony said we were unaware of anyone that had run up debt playing the PowerPick program or the pooling service.
Okay, thank you. Representative Thiessen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just a couple of things. And the folks in the lottery are right, and I didn't mean to say that they were lottery retailers. I just said I think that there's some analogies between the two, since they are essentially buying the tickets. The issue with the unclaimed prizes is not so much whether they're getting to the people. I mean, that is an issue, but it's in some sense the impact on the state's general fund as well. You know, there's the three kind of players here, and so there's a policy decision about, you know, if they're buying it as a proxy for someone, should they be able to keep the money, or should it be treated like anybody else who, you know, or should we look at the proxy, the person that's the proxy? The disclosures, and we've talked about this already, I think that there's some work that we can work on the disclosure piece of it, and I've already told Paul that we're willing to work on that. But the other thing to remember on this is that we're not just dealing with PowerPick, although they're the only one in the state. You know, this could be a type of business that grows, and I think it's worth us considering. You know, that's why I said at the beginning, it's not about a bad actor. It's about thinking, how do we deal with this type of new business entity that's involved in the gambling arena? I guess that's what I would leave the committee with, to kind of think about this more generally.
Okay, if we could still have the panel hold. Representative Lesh, do you have a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. For Mr. Cassidy, you had stated, I think, that you had 300 customers in Minnesota, and the average amount spent by those customers was $10 or $40?
$40. You're right on both accounts. Average at $10 a week and $40 a month. $30 to $40 a month.
And I don't know what the take is. I think there was in there on fees and stuff, but it surprised me you were able to support an office space in Anoka on 300 customers at that budget.
Mr. Chairman, yes. Representative Lesh, we're not.
Well, so you don't have a presence in Anoka, or?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Lesh, we do. 300 customers is not very viable at this point. They're trying to grow the business.
Okay.
It needs to be much larger.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Cassidy. Any other questions? Okay, I'm hearing none. We'll ask Representative Atkin to renew his motion here to move House File 88 to lay it over for possible inclusion in one of our omnibus bills. Thank you very much for your testimony, and appreciate your time.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
With that, members, we're going to call Representative Ann Lincheski and Representative Ray Vandeveer to the table.
Representative Lincheski, just so that you know.
Representative Zeller.
Just so you know, your notes are on air.
I see that, and I'm sorry.
Just in case. If you want us to read them while we go along, we will.
Looks good to us. All members, Representative Zellers will move House File 463 and House File 1208 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. To put those before us, and do we need a vote on that?
No.
Okay, with that, Representative Lincheski, do you want to begin?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, and Representative Sellers. I am such a slob that I apologize, but I do need my notes, so I hope you... I'll try to put them all here so you can't see.
Just in full disclosure, so you know, we're looking and cheating off your notes.
Okay, good. House File 463, and Mr. Chair, I want to thank you again for waiting for Representative Vandeveer to be here. We have very similar bills, but I'll speak off of mine. The legislature, at least the members who were here last year, may recall that this bill went through the process last year. I want to thank all the legislators in both parties that supported it, and I'm sure if Representative Sebring were in her capacity that she was in last year, she would be thanking you as well. This year, I'm authoring this along with Representative Neil Peterson, who has won the seat that Representative Sebring had, Representative Dan Larson, and then there are the Bloomington legislators authoring the same piece of legislation in the Senate. And just to remind you what it is, this just says that if the state of Minnesota, in its wisdom, which is all of us legislators, decides that we would like a new metro casino, that the voters in the host city would get a chance to vote on that proposal. Now, I should mention that in last year's committee, Representative Solberg, in one of the committees that went through, original language said that the state of Minnesota should pay for that election. And my feeling was that if the state is thrusting it on a community, then it also should pay for the election. Representative Solberg argued quite effectively, I think, that no, Bloomington should pay. So this year's legislation, Bloomington would pay for that election. There would not be a cost to the state to hold that election. A few comments on it, and you know that the issue of a referendum is a big issue in the Minnesota legislature in many areas. In fact, this year the governor is proposing that we have a vote on whether or not we should have a gas tax. Last year we had proposals to vote on whether or not host cities should have stadiums. And I thought I would also share for members who are not as active in the tax area, and there are some here who are, but just so that for members who may not know this, these are some of the things we currently require voter approval on right now. They are... And this is different than city council approval now. These are voter approvals. Issuing general obligation bonds, imposing levies in a city or a county that exceeds levy limits, which many of you know for the last 20 years, 16 of those years we've had levy limits. So for cities to spend more, they've had to ask their voters. Improving school operating levels, all the local sales tax option bills, which many people carry here, require first a voter approval. Consolidating counties, and there's a lot of smaller things like special service districts, housing districts, lake improvement districts, soil water districts. These all have to go through the voters first. Another set of voter approval in reverse that we've had, and we've had many proponents of this in the legislature, is what we call reverse referendum. And that says that while there doesn't have to be a vote to have something happen, the voters can undo it if they don't like it. We have that for county capital improvement programs, city capital improvement programs, EDAs, and all our port authorities. And many of you know whether or not you sit on the tax committee, that the governor, one of his hallmark initiatives this year is what he's calling the turbo tax charge statement, I guess. I'm not sure what the language is yet, but nonetheless, it does that. It allows voters to undo the acts of other elected officials if they think that what's taken place is not the way to go. So I would ask you to consider that as you think about this bill. One other thing I wanted to talk about, if I might, and that is that what I would argue on the host community concept as it relates to gaming is that when the Minnesota legislature decides we think we ought to have more gaming, and there are certainly people at this table who really want to do that and people who really oppose that. And again, this is not instead of the legislature voting, it's in addition to the legislature voting. So once the legislature has made that decision, the host city has to look at a myriad of variables that have nothing to do with what state legislators would have looked at. State legislators need to decide if this is the right policy for the state of Minnesota to enter into something we have not yet done in the state. We do not have a major metro urban casino in the state of Minnesota. And so what some of the things host cities would address that the state would not would be its own local costs, its police costs, its the public costs that relate to congestion, how it would do land use planning in its communities. Would it have sexually oriented businesses zoned around the casino? Would it have smoking bans in the casino? Would it have a convention center? We have, in fact, in law right now, it is not legal to have a convention center in Bloomington, although that is part of the proposal. How would it structure tax increment financing? What would the state need to pay the people of Bloomington who have, in fact, put the money forward to make that piece of property what it what it is. Now, if the state were to benefit from a casino, it would be benefiting at the expense of the investors, in this case Bloomington taxpayers, and would it pay back all the subsidies to Bloomington residents that have been given to the proposal? So there would be numerous issues in my particular community, and you could extrapolate this to any community that would be looking at a metro casino. Certainly a host community would have a whole long list of issues that the state would not be particularly interested in addressing. One other thing I'd just like to point out to you that while I understand the governor's proposal that will be coming forward, I think next week, will be not site specific. Last year's bill for Caesars wasn't site specific either, and my legislation is not site specific either. It says that any community who will be addressing this, if it is the will of the legislature, would have a say in the matter. And one thing I would ask you all as colleagues to think about is that when we look at proposals that come before the Minnesota legislature, people fight for them, whether they're clearly desirable, things like colleges, or things that maybe aren't considered so desirable and that are controversial. We still have legislators who are willing to carry bills to put stadiums in their communities and be willing to take that on. We have people who fight valiantly for prisons in their districts. In fact, I think the bonding bill we just passed had $92 million for prisons, and all of those proposals had advocates and House and Senate authors who wanted them. We, in fact, had a senator in the state of Minnesota who fought for and carried legislation to put nuclear waste gas storage in his district. And we now have, I would argue that he probably should have, but I want you all just to think about this seriously, because I'm pleading on behalf of my city. Yesterday's bonding bill, which was a victory for bipartisanship, and I'm proud to have voted for that, had originally in the governor's proposal a proposal for a nursing home for sex offenders, basically was what it was. The legislator who represents, I think it's pronounced Guan Ching, I know somebody else here would know, in Walker, Minnesota, fought to, in fact, remove the language that made it not site-specific for that nursing home care for sex offenders, and instead made, let's make sure it actually gets to Walker. Now, the reason that people should think about this, these are people who wanted jobs in their community, and that's understandable, and they should. A casino in Bloomington would no doubt create probably 10,000 jobs. It's just a matter of time. Yet all Bloomington legislators are not here fighting for it. We're trying to speak on behalf of our people, and so what we would ask all of you is to think about the unsavory projects that have come before the Minnesota legislature with a bill author every time. And of all 201 of us in the House and Senate, nobody is carrying a bill to put a metro casino in their own district. And we have seen in the past people try to put them in other people's districts, but not in their own. So I would really ask you to think about, in the issue of referendum, that this is not a little thing. It is not a road or something we're already doing, like gas taxes are for, or stadiums, things we've thought about. This is something we have never done. And the costs and potential policy questions for a host city are tremendous. And so I would hope that you would support not only my community, but any community that may be the place that the Minnesota legislature is looking at.
Okay, Representative Vandeveer, do you want to tell us the differences between the bills and
thank you,
provide
Mr. Chair.
Your testimony?
They are very similar, is why I asked. Plus, I knew I'd be late, is why I asked Representative Lencheski to present with us, But actually, the bills are identical, except for mine includes a town. And the language is written such that it solves a particular issue in Columbus Township, which I represent, with regard to the proposed harness track and card club. The bill doesn't include any restrictions relating to those activities. However, if state law were to change, we're advised that whatever became legal under these licenses could now occur at this site without local approval, without any more local input into it. And so it becomes important with all the discussion in the legislature relating to gaming currently underway that it's important to the people of Columbus that they have input into what occurs here in addition to what they may or may not approve relating to their license that was okayed last week. And so this particular piece of legislation, including that includes towns, would address that problem. It's also pretty consistent, I think, with what I've heard the governor say, that we would not force a facility in any given area. So this kind of goes along with that policy, and that the people would have the referendum to make that decision. So with that, anyone have any questions? Or
okay, are there any questions? Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Chair Westerberg. Representative Lenchesky or Representative Vandeveer, what do they do in other states where gambling is licensed and it's outside the purview of Indian gaming?
Representative Lenchesky.
I want to know, do they have referenda for decision-making?
Chairman Westerberg and Representative Erickson, I don't know. You know, this is so new to Minnesota, I can't tell you that honestly. There have been, what I do know from researching about how casinos, what happens with states that begin to use casinos to fund government, is they pretty much never get off the need to do gaming. So I know that once a state starts using gaming to fund its public services, it needs to keep opening more casinos every time it needs to fund more things. As far as the literature relating to gaming around the state, I haven't been able to find much on that. I have spent a lot of time reading about the conflict with legislators in that we do a lot of things here in this state, and many states do, to encourage savings. We have all kinds of tax initiatives to encourage people to saving, and using casinos to fund government actually is in direct conflict to that. It actually encourages people to not save. So the literature is full of the tax policy as it relies to, as it looks at gaming, the crime issues, the social costs, and then the what happens once you start. There's very little to be found on referendums, but I can ask nonpartisan research to do a survey of every state and get it to you.
Representative Andrew.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Erickson, I'm not sure that it's as important to know what other states do as it is to know that I think customarily in Minnesota we like to have the people make these decisions, and I think that's what this legislation does. It doesn't prevent her from
So Representative Vandeveer, does the state make decisions about where other businesses should be located by referenda?
Representative Vandeveer.
Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson, they don't. However, they don't also pass legislation that takes the control away from the locals. And what we are told is that if the gaming that's allowed under these licenses is changed here at the legislature, in most cases, in fact, in all cases, if businesses change their use or expand or significantly change, local government does have a say. What we are told is that under current law, if what is licensed, what is allowed under these licenses changes here at the legislature, then the facility may change, and it doesn't go back to the local board for approval.
Mr. Chair,
I think it's different than what you're. With businesses, it does go back to the town or the city. With this, it would not.
Representative Lenchesky, would you like to add to that?
Westerberg, and to Representative Erickson's question that she asked of Representative Vandenberg, I would add to that. When the state makes a decision that there will be a new kind of business that's legal, it does not get involved in positioning those businesses. However, I should add that last year, or was it the year before, Minnesota decided that it would in fact encourage certain locations of business. I'm actually an opponent of doing that. I don't support job fees or tax increment financing or any other way we subsidize and then also distort market decisions. So I understand what you're asking, and I think that's inappropriate for government to do that. This is not legal in the state of Minnesota. Minnesota is making a decision or looking at, shall we go down a road we have never gone down before? And this is when policymakers, the people like you all and the 201 of us here, need to decide, is this something that we're going to do? And then if we're going to do it, how are we going to do it? But I don't think it's really a fair comparison to say, you know, do we get involved in other businesses? Those are all legal, conforming businesses in the state of Minnesota. This is not. We haven't done that. And to the extent that if we were to do it, should the state be dictating where these things go? I think it has a role if it's going to take a cut. And my understanding is the proposal is that the government wants a cut. So,
Mr. Chair.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Chair Westerberg. But we already are involved because we signed the compacts with the tribes. So the state is already involved in gaming because there are certain obligations in the compacts that we must or are supposed to fulfill. So we're already there.
Okay, any other questions? Do you have any other testifiers?
I'm not certain, Mr. Chair. There are some people from Columbus Township here. If any of them wanted to add anything,
I was
a town board member.
We would love to hear from somebody from Columbus Township or from Bloomington.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Lencheski.
If that testifier, while that testifier is coming down, if I could just respond to Representative Erickson's comment at the end there, and you all should know I didn't bring 50,000 Bloomington residents with me for a reason, and there are certainly people lining up to be here, but I anticipated that that would be disruptive, so I chose not to do that. But what I would say, and for all of us as policymakers, the state of Minnesota did have these compacts and is in the business. Now, I don't know that anybody here is part of that. I mean, I certainly wasn't here when Skip Humphrey and Governor Perpich and Governor Carlson constructed that deal. What I would say to all the legislators here, if you thought that was a bad deal, don't rush to have another one, because the proposals that are out there do not benefit the state much, and in fact go to, in the Bloomington proposal, go to a private company in Canada. So let's not rush too quickly to create another bad compact.
Representative Lencheski, I really appreciate that you didn't bring 50,000 people here, but do you have any documentation such as a letter from the mayor or anything from the Bloomington City Council, anything that indicates that they are adamantly opposed to this particular or in favor of this bill?
That's a great question. Thank you for asking that, Representative Westberg. The Bloomington City Council took a vote last year, 2003, 7-0, in opposing a casino at the Mall of America. They're on record that they absolutely oppose it. Their position has not changed. However, I did not solicit from them, or did they ask me to not carry this legislation. I carried it last year. The legislator or the city council members who represent Bloomington were well aware of it. And to the best of my knowledge, we're saying, you go. But I think the hurdle here, really, the policy question you're asking is that, you know, well, how about just letting four city council members make that decision? That's certainly a legitimate task, instead of 90,000 residents. What I would tell you is all of these are just hurdles in slowing down a huge policy decision. None of them stop them. This is not a true stop. The state knows that all cities are political subdivisions of that. They are creatures of the state, and it can go back and say, boy, we're even going to throw out a local decision. We've done it time and time again. But what I would say is it allows for delay and thought, which is not taking place. In fact, in our community, only because I had asked for a town hall meeting related to some of the proposals that are swirling around the Capitol, did we first hear that one of the largest proposers in this initiative was, in fact, had a plan and working on a plan, and we just found out about it last week. So we would really like the opportunity for Bloomington residents to have a chance to know what's really going on, and that has been part of the problem with the process. Now, when I was working against, and I'll be clear, I've been a casino opponent. When I was working against the Caesars proposal last year, and that proposal was, remember, to send the money to Vegas. This year it's to Canada. But last year when I was fighting that proposal, the people who were, in fact, one of the guys who was flown in here from Caesars, I can't remember his name, Don something, he told me, we'll take your local approval language. Because in the end, they know if you can spend millions of dollars in a campaign to educate the public, you can win. Now, I'm not naive. I understand that if you have enough money and deep enough pockets to spend, you know, $10,000 a head to get a yes vote, it can be done. I understand that. But I do think things are moving way too fast for the host community that's in question here. And while we've consistently said that Bloomington is not a site, it's not site-specific, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, you know, we have proposers who are standing in our town hall laying out $3.9 million or 3.9 million square feet of development. So I think we should not pretend we don't know what's going on and instead say, let's spend lots of time letting people know, you know, what's going on. So it's really allowing the voters to engage and get informed in what may happen in their community.
Thank you, Representative Blancheski. Representative Vandeveer?
Yes, Chair Westerberg, to that point, he's not here right now, but he did offer to come down. The chair of the Columbus Town Board said that he would be in favor of legislation like this. And he is, as far as I know, one of the people that have voted to support the racetrack and card club. So I think regardless of which side you're on, the idea of local input into decisions of development in a township or city, I think is pretty universally accepted, and I think it's quite reasonable. And
our Representative Vandeveer, how many people are there on the town board of Columbus Township?
I believe there's five, but Mr. Hefty's here, and he can talk about that.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Hefty. Please state your name, and would you please spell your last name for us, too, and tell us how you're involved here?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, committee members. My name is Thomas Hefty, H-E-F-T-Y. I am a 13-year resident of Columbus Township and a supervisor on Columbus Town Board. We appreciate the opportunity to say something here today. As you've probably read in the paper, we have a harness track and a card club coming to Columbus Township. And the importance of what I've just said there, the harness club, or the harness track and card club, is my residents, 758, signed a petition, didn't want this to happen in our community. 758 are out of approximately 2,400 individuals that vote in our community. There's 3,970 population. We haven't found them all, but they're there. So as I've gone around to my constituents, what they're really concerned about in all the language as it sits right today is what happens if the state does pass some casino or a racino? What do we do? Right now, nothing. We're looking to you folks for some help that we could go back to the public and we could say this is what we will have happening in Columbus Township. And we really think this is important for a township to be involved in what we're talking about today. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Hefty. Any questions for the testifiers? Okay, thank you. As far as, do you have a final wrap-up statement or anything you'd like to say, Representative?
No, Mr. Chair.
Vandeveer?
No, ma'am.
No.
Mr. Chair.
Okay. Okay. And hearing no other questions here, what we're going to do is lay House File 463 and 1208 over for possible inclusion in the technical bill. With that, members, I think thank you very much for your presentations. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members.
Thank you.
Members, as far as heads up here on next week's committee meetings, Tuesday we're going to be tackling the wonderful Texas Hold'em. I think Texas Hold'em was up in the Senate today at 3 o'clock, so I'm not sure what happened with that, but we're looking forward to giving a discussion here in our committee on Tuesday. So with that, Representative Atkins.
Housekeeping issue. You referenced three omnibus bills.
Yes.
And this one in particular, you talked about holding over potential inclusion in a technical bill.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I assume that was a
misstatement. Misstatement on my part.
I wish it was just purely technical, but it's not. It may not be the way it'll go.
That's correct. We'll definitely hold both of these over for possible inclusion in the policy, omnibus policy.
Thank you, sure.
Thank you, Representative.
I get by you, isn't it? That was pretty technical.
Okay, with that, we're adjourned.